This is XTP Media.
Welcome to Extended. This episode is being brought to you with the support of Nylon Films, the makers of The Aviatrix. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the latest episode of Extended.
Hello there, I'm Peter Johnson from XTP Media and welcome to episode 30 of Extended. Coming to you live from the air day at the Royal Naval Air Station, Yeovilton. And today I'm flying solo. I'm here on my own. Unfortunately, Gareth, who's due to join me, has been unable to get down. So you've got me for this very quick episode. So I hope you enjoy this coverage and some feedback from the last few weeks. So I hope you enjoy this very quick show. The air display has already started and we've already enjoyed seeing the Sea Fury by Lieutenant Commander Chris Gott, the Lynx AH-7 and for the first time the Mid-Air Hunter. It's the first time I've seen it, so I really, really enjoyed that display. Just seen the Black Cat pair perform as well, so things are well underway here. But it's not just about the flying, it's also about what's on the ground. There is some wonderful coverage of naval aviation from all over the world. I've had the opportunity to speak to French, German and British pilots and aviators, so we'll bring you some coverage of that shortly. But it's probably who's not here rather than who is here that's made the news. We're missing out on the Sea Vixen, which is a great shame. We were hoping that she was going to make it, but unfortunately she's not been able to, so that's a real shame. There are, however, all the latest additions to the Royal Navy, including the Merlins, the Wildcats, as well as some of our good old friends, the Sea Kings and the AH-7s and other models of the Lynx. The static display is very impressive. I've had a wander around there. There's all sorts of aircraft. Enjoyed looking at the Rafale. We've got you a brief interview looking at that aircraft shortly. And the RAF are here. The Army are here. The Navy, of course, are heavy in presence. But international air forces as well. We've seen the Polish Air Force, Germans and the French, of course. And we're looking forward to seeing the Belgians displaying the F-16 and the Swiss displaying the F-18. So lots to come. But before I get the opportunity to see all those wonderful aircraft displaying for us, we're going to bring you some coverage from today's show. And of course, today's show is being brought to you with the kind support of Nylon Films, makers of the Aviatrix. Now, we start our segment interviews with Tracy Curtis Taylor, of course, who is the star of the Aviatrix and featured in our episode last year, which covered her solo flight from Cape Town to London. We start off with Tracy briefing some air cadets, and then I get the opportunity to speak to Tracy and hear a little bit about her plans for the future. And if any of you know Tracy, you'll know that they're quite spectacular. So listen out for that. I then get to speak to Mark Legresley, who is from the Gazelle Squadron. We get to speak to the pilot of the Rafale. Lieutenant Commander Lee Evans from the Empire Test Pilot School. We get to speak to Mikhail, French Navy flight engineer on the Falcon 10. And then we get to speak to Lieutenant Alex Lovell-Smith, who is a Wildcat pilot. So I hope you enjoy this coverage, and I'll be back shortly.
And the ones you see with the wing walkers generally have the even bigger engines on, which are the Pratt & Whitney 450s, which are really heavy. It just makes the nose, I think, too heavy in the ground handling. And, of course, massive fuel consumption. So there you go. So where have you come from?
Dartmouth,
okay. So you've just driven in this morning?
Yeah, driven up. We're helping out on one of the hangars.
Fantastic.
So we're helping out up here. So we've got an hour off.
I hope you've got sun hats and shorts.
No,
we haven't. Are you? Oh,
it's
an amazing day.
To fly, then?
Fantastic to fly.
Yeah,
fantastic. I mean, you know, you take an aeroplane like this to Africa, and I just flew it on the deck. So I was as low as I could go, you know, up the beaches at 25 feet. But, you know, generally 200 feet in fantastic terrain. You know, I was down to about 15 feet flying the Soda Lakes through the Rift Valley. You know, over Victoria Falls, two or three, you know, so it was amazing flying. And then a lot higher over places like Egypt, where they basically treat you like a commercial airliner.
Yeah.
They have no idea of private aviation. They don't acknowledge private aviation at all, and they have no idea what a vintage biplane is. So they just want you up at 10,000 feet flying like an airliner.
What was the range on the tanks?
I've got 6 hours. The fuel is all in the top wing, so I had a couple of extra fuel tanks put up there. So I fly no longer than about 5 hours. So the flight legs were planned on about, I don't know, 300 nautical miles a day. But what you actually manage to cover depends very much on the wind. So this, you're very, very wind sensitive in this. As soon as there's 20 knots of headwind, you know, you lose a huge part of your ground speed. So you had to be very careful in the flight planning and alternates. But in general, the weather was very good in Africa. You know, it came through a few showers with the intertropical convergence zone. But in general, it was pretty good. It was only when I hit the Mediterranean that things got a little bit more difficult.
How long did it actually take you?
2 months to fly.
Months.
Yeah. And that included, you know, a week in Egypt on the ground in weather and mechanical issues, and then, you know, a week in Europe. I was flying back through Europe in the middle of winter, so that was difficult, you know, in this. I'm so busy thinking about Africa, I suddenly forgot that I had to fly through Europe, another 2,000 miles through Europe in the middle of winter. So that was, you know, not something I did.
So if you came to Egypt, where did you go?
I tell you what, I came up the eastern side of Africa, which is actually, you know, it's the old Imperial Airways route, really. So it was up from the Cape, eastern side of Lake Victoria, and then 2,000 miles of Nile up through to Sudan, Uganda, Sudan and Egypt.
Quite impressive. So where did you learn to fly then?
I learned to fly. I had my first flying lesson in Canada, but I did all my flying in New Zealand.
Yeah?
Yeah. So I was there when I was in my early 20s. And I joined the New Zealand Warbirds, which is where I started to fly, you know, this sort of thing.
Yeah.
So that was the key, really.
That was very cool.
Thank you. Are you interested in flying?
Yeah, possibly.
Are you?
It's an option. I'm keeping my options open.
Well, you know what? You should fly. Whatever else you think you might want, just, you know what? Go and do some flying.
It's freedom, isn't it?
Because it's just one of the best things you'll ever do. It is freedom, but it's, you know, there's a lot of discipline and skill involved with it. But it's just so exciting and challenging. It's everything. Flying is actually, it combines lots of things. You know, it's mental and physical kind of.
My son's just done a commercial pilot's license out in Spain.
Has he really?
Yeah, he's just trying to get his first airline job.
Okay, so he's serious. So what has he done? He's done a commercial license and
he's got his commercial license. He's done a full ATPO course out in Perez. Took him 15 months.
Wow, that's good going then.
Yeah. Well, he passed everything first time, so he was lucky.
Okay.
Did his
answer. You can't actually do it.
Just the witness.
Oh, it's just handling. It's just the handling.
You're not even listening.
I am listening.
Anyway,
it must be an experience to fly, though.
It's wonderful to fly. It's
real. Where's the one I flew? There's a chipmunk around here somewhere. I flew one of them.
Oh, they're fun. They're great.
They're brilliant.
Yeah.
Now we fly these for opportunities. One of them around here as well.
Okay, I'm now with Tracy on the flight line and we're with the aircraft. Tracy, welcome back to the UK.
Very nice to be here. We're having this blazing summer, of course. So. Yeah.
And of course, it's some time now since you finally got back to the UK after your epic trip. The film is now produced and I think it's just out. But you've been very busy. We've just left some air cadets and you're lining up to have a very busy day.
Well, look, we're here at the Royal Navy show at Yeovilton, so I flew in from Goodwood yesterday. So, yeah, it's going to be another scorching day. The crowd is just picking up, but it's just already got a fantastic vibe to it. So yeah. I'm just thrilled to be here. But, yeah, I've been back 7 months now, having a really busy summer. I've just done the Festival of Speed at Goodwood, straight into the Royal International Air Tattoo, 7 days at Farnborough, and now Yeovilton.
And there's a lot more on your schedule. Plans are starting to form for some new ideas. Is there not anything to keep you down on terra firma?
Well, you know, the fact is, Peter, I have the best expeditionary aeroplane in the world. And, you know, you do the flight like Africa, which was just so brilliant and life-changing, and I'm going to fly on. So the plan now is to fly to Australia via the Middle East and India and on to Australia. So it's basically, I think, a world trip, isn't it?
Yeah, that is.
Because if I get to Australia, I'll then have to take the wings off the steerman and ship it to America and then fly it across America.
Wow. So when did these plans start forming?
Do you know, I can't exactly put my finger on it, but almost from the minute I got back, I think the plan was always to fly on, really. So, you know, you get through the winter. I've had a massively busy time just moving.
Yeah.
I'm now Goodwood based with both of my aeroplanes. So talking to the sponsors, but the response to the Africa flight has been huge.
Yeah.
So why stop now? I'm on a roll.
So plans for Australia are now starting to form. When do you think you might be doing that?
Well, I have done the basic flight planning for it, and it's just under 13,000 miles. And it's deceptive, actually, because you think it's so much farther. But actually, the Africa flight was just under 10,000 miles. So it's not that much more to get to Australia now.
Right.
So done the basic flight planning just to work out fuel distances, you know, the legs, the sectors, minimising difficult airspace and water crossings, etc. So we've done that, but I'm now, in fact, speaking to Boeing about, you know, integrating that with a whole kind of promotional speaking campaign. So it'll be a very different approach to what we've done in Africa. Exactly. The focus in Africa was filming it and telling the story. And, of course, having a film crew with you 24 hours a day is hugely demanding. So I'm going to do this one slightly differently, I think.
Okay. When are you expecting to do it?
Next year. I'm planning on 2015. Looking,
you don't
at,
hang around, do you?
Well, no. Why would you? Life is for living, isn't it? And I can sit down for a very long time when I get back. So provisionally the plan is to leave in the autumn of 2015.
Yeah.
I need to have a close look at the weather patterns over that time. But I think the plan is to fly south with the sun. The problem on the route, of course, will be flying through the monsoon line, through wherever it may sit, through India or Burma. You know, and that is problematic, obviously, flying open cockpit, VFR, you know, basic visual flying. So I've got to be very, very careful with the weather.
Yeah, okay. And in terms of support, you've talked about Boeing. What other support do you think you're going to need in terms of our listeners? Is there anything out there we can do to help support this?
Ooh, now there's a question. I think, you know, it's lovely to know people sort of spiritually support the flight, really.
Yeah.
And it's been such a terrific response from aviation people. You know, people love the idea of this sort of flying. It's it's flying in its purest form, really. So I'm just astonished at the response I'm getting, really. So I think it's just nice to know people are out there. And I'd certainly like to have more time to talk about the flight. You know, I never really had the chance to blog it while I was in Africa.
Yeah.
It was too intense a program. You know, I hardly had time to sleep, frankly, by the time we'd get there. Flight planning, media demands, filming demands. So I'd like to make much more of the actual experience of flying it on this trip.
Right. And you're taking the same aircraft?
Yeah, absolutely. The Spirit of Artemis. Yeah. It's the way it's configured now. I can do it with the current flight planning. I don't need any more fuel. So it's good to go, basically. I mean, what we would need to do, it's always the logistical side, planning all the permits, the border issues, the fuel is a massive planning exercise, because nobody deals in avgas. It's all turboprop, Jet A1. So we still have to look at that, positioning fuel out ahead, getting the diplomatic and procedural clearances in place. But yes, I'm still working with the same sponsors, Artemis Investments and Boeing.
Wow.
And, I think now, off the successful completion of the Africa flight, everyone is fired up behind this one. So I'm treating Africa now as the preparation for the big one.
Yeah. And all that work, of course, you are a CFI as well. You're a qualified CFI. Are you getting to do any flying at all?
Listen, my instructing years were a long time ago. I haven't instructed for a long time.
Right.
And I just, I've considered doing that because, Goodwood has such a dynamic aero club. It might be nice to go and renew that.
Yeah.
But at the moment, I just don't honestly have the time to do it. When I fly, I just like to go and fly my aeroplanes.
Yeah.
And I'm doing a lot of sort of charitable stuff, trying to support charities like Airability and Flying for the Disabled, etc. So, there's some nice flying associated with that, joyrides, trying to encourage cadets and, so it's really becoming that sort of focus around the aeroplane. So not instructing.
Well, Tracy, I know you're very busy. You've got a busy day ahead of you. Thanks very much for joining us. And, of course, we'll keep track and stay in touch.
Thank you very much. Great pleasure.
Hi, I'm with Mark Legresley from the Gazelle Squadron. Mark, welcome to Extended.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure being here.
Can you tell us a little bit about what the Gazelle Squadron is? Because it's a pretty new initiative, isn't it? I haven't seen you here before.
No, it is a new initiative. We started at the beginning of this year with one helicopter. We're now two helicopters. And by the autumn, we'll hopefully have three. And by Abingdon Air Show next year, we hope to have four doing a flying display. Four Gazelle helicopters, one in Marines colours, one in Navy colours, one in Air Force colours, and one in Army colours.
Okay, what are the aircraft that we've got here at Yeovilton today?
Today we've brought with us Ginger, because they all have their own names, and Ginger's an Air Force aircraft,
right.
Which was used for training.
Yeah.
And we've got Gordon, which is a Royal Marines aircraft.
Okay, and in terms of the models, what are they different models? What
are they are different models. Basically, you have Army aircraft are AH-1s, Navy are HT-2s, and RAF are HT-3s.
And what were the differences between those models in terms of flying and capability?
Well, in effect, the Army ones were, which were lent to the Marines as well, were obviously operational aircraft used in operational situations, so we actually have three AH-1s, one of which served in Iraq and two of which served in the Falklands War.
Yeah.
The Air Force and Navy ones were war dodgers, if you excuse the term. They were used for flying training.
Right, okay. Now, the aircraft aren't flying here, but they're in absolutely stunning condition. They're immaculate, an absolute pleasure to see. How do you keep these aircraft in this condition?
We don't rag them. So by that, what I mean is that in military service, an aircraft is used for a purpose, and it's not necessarily treasured, because the people who are flying it have no part in its ownership. Most of us here today actually have a share of each aircraft, so therefore we have a reason to make sure they stay in perfect condition. And then, well, we're not doing a lot of flying hours in them either, whereas the military, they do a lot of flying in their airframes, so if we do more than 50 hours a year on an airframe, that would be quite unusual. So that also helps.
And what's your background, Mark?
I'm ex-army.
Okay, and you used to fly Gazelles, did you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've got about 3,000 hours on Gazelles.
Right, and any other types?
Lynx and some civilian aircraft, but most of us here are ex-military, mostly ex-army, Air Corps, and we do have the odd Navy guy and the occasional Air Force guy as well.
Okay, and what makes the Gazelle so special? Why have you gone about setting up the Gazelle Squadron?
People who have been involved with the Gazelles have a love for them. You know, it doesn't matter what you're flying today, whether it's an Apache, a Merlin, a Chinook. Most people trained on Gazelles, and you know, who are of some senior age, I should say. youngsters these days learn on Squirrel. It's just not as nice an aircraft to fly, in my estimation, and those people who have flown both would choose the Gazelle every time.
Right, okay. And what in terms of flying it, what is it like to fly? is it a smooth aircraft? Is it challenging?
It's not challenging. It's incredibly smooth. However, if you abuse it, it can be unforgiving because you've got a lot of power and you can be lulled into a false sense of security if you were to abuse it, and it could bite, like any aircraft, to be fair, but it's got such a large power to weight ratio that it cruises at 130 knots. Most of our aircraft have had the innards stripped out of all the operational equipment, so therefore they're quite light. Gordon here on the left is only weighs 1,000 kilos basic weight.
Wow!
So it can go everywhere at 130 knots.
Yeah, and they're all ex-military airframes. Were there any issues in decommissioning them?
Not really. It's quite a well practiced situation. Taking an aircraft from military service and putting it into civilian permit service. And so it was reasonably straightforward. You do have to do some, move some pieces of equipment, but otherwise it's fairly straightforward.
Well, they've got a unique sound to them. Absolutely excited about seeing you next year performing. How do you go about pulling all that together? What are the steps you have to go through to actually take it from a static demonstration into a flying demonstration?
It's reasonably straightforward. You have to have a suitably qualified pilot with a suitable CV. You then present yourself to a display examiner as an individual and corporately as a team, and they sign off on your display. You know, depending on what you've previously done, they will allow you to do a range of manoeuvres. So if you were an ex-Sharks pilot or an ex-Blue Eagles pilot, then you can expect to be able to do the full range of aerobatic manoeuvres with these helicopters. So we're pretty much at that level, and so we're
ready to go.
Ready to go. We've got a display routine in draft, and it will be different. It will be more helicopter rather than red arrows.
Yeah, okay. looking forward to it. Tell us where you're based then.
We're based at Bourne Park near Andover.
Right, okay. That's probably why I've seen you in the air recently.
Oh, right.
Going past that way. Where can we find out more about the Gazelle Squadron online?
If you go to www.thegazellesquadron.com, you'll find out all about the aircraft that we have and about the squadron there.
Mark, thank you very much. Have a good show.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, I'm on the flight line and we're looking at a beautiful aircraft. I'm with a Navy lieutenant from the French Navy, and your call sign is?
Payo.
Payo, okay. Tell us a little bit about the aircraft we're looking at.
It's a French Navy Rafale, so the Navy version of the Dassault Rafale. It's a twin-engine delta-wing scanner jet. It's based at Landivisiau naval base near Brest in Brittany.
Okay.
And when the French aircraft carrier Charles de Gaulle is at sea, the squadrons are going to the carrier.
Okay, and you're based on, you're with which squadron is it?
The 11F squadron.
11F, okay.
One of the oldest from the French Navy.
Right, okay. So tell us a little bit about the characteristics of the aircraft and its performance.
The jet can fly at more than Mach 1.6,
yeah.
And it's a multi-role jet, so carrying air-to-air, air-to-ground, and anti-surface warfare missions,
okay.
And mainly used in air defense to defend the carrier group, carrier superiority, and doing closer support.
Okay. And so what weapons will it cover in terms of the role of air support?
For air support, we carry GBU-12s, so laser-guided weapon, GPS-guided weapon, mix laser and GPS, like the NN Spaceways.
Okay.
We have a targeting pod for that,
yeah.
The Damocles targeting pod, and a 30mm gun.
Right, okay, so she's quite heavily armed.
Yes.
And what's your flying career been to get you into an aircraft like this?
The standard flying career is flying flight screening after the tests, and flight training for the French Navy, flight training, the basis flight training in France, in Languedoc, and then go to the Meridian for with the U.S. Navy to fly the Goshawk and do the first U.S. Carrier qualification,
right.
And then go back to L'Andivisio to fly Super Étendard or Rafale.
Yeah.
And then,
And so you've flown a Super Étendard as well, have you?
Yes.
Okay. And what's the differences between the aircraft? Tell us.
There is a lot. One more engine, the wings, the...
A lot more automation in this aircraft.
Yes, a lot more help for the pilot, a lot more comfort, and a lot more capabilities.
Yeah.
So you carry a lot, there is a lot of hard points under wings. So the Super Étendard, which is a great but small jet, you have to choose. You have always to choose between weapons or fuel.
Yeah.
And on the Rafale, you can just carry everything you want.
Yeah.
And for the ergonomy, the sensors are much better for the radar.
Well, it's a beautiful aircraft. Thank you very much for coming and talking to us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, I'm with Lieutenant Commander Lee Evans. Lee, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Lee, you're with the Empire Test Pilot School. Can you tell us a little bit about what that actually is?
It's one of the four main test pilot schools in the world that train military test pilots, both rotary wing and fixed wing.
Yeah.
Empire Test Pilot School has been going for 70 years, based at Boscombe Down, and it's still the world leader in training test pilots and flight test engineers together.
Yeah.
So they go on and then become military flight test professionals to test the future, you know, everything from the F-35, Merlin aircraft, deck landing trials, Apache. New weapons on aircraft.
Okay.
Everything from, you know, it could be a new radio, it could be a whole new aircraft.
Yeah. And you're based at Boscombe Down, are you?
Yeah, I've been based there the last 5 years. I'm a tutor on the test pilot school now.
Okay, gosh. So tell us a little bit about your career.
Oh, I joined in 1991 at 16. It was just a couple of GCSEs, and I was a mechanic and then an artificer for 8 years on ships, fixing boilers and gas turbines and sewage treatment plants and things. I was then a diver and then transferred to become an officer in 99.
Yep.
Luckily, got to become a pilot. And then...
Hang on a sec. Luckily, got to become a pilot. That's a big transition from boilers to flying some of the latest aircraft in the inventory.
Well, I saw the Lynx flying around the back of the ship.
Yeah.
Made that an aim. Did some exams and stuff. And then I... went to back to school and went to Dartmouth and then become a pilot and did all the normal flying training, fixed wing and rotary. Always wanted to go back to sea on the back of a ship.
Yeah.
And then become a Lynx pilot, did two tours out to the Gulf in 2003, 2004, to the Med, done counter-drug ops in the West Indies, counter-piracy.
So is it predominantly rotary?
Rotary, yeah. I was then really lucky. I spent 2 years in Antarctica on HMS Endurance.
Wow, okay.
I got to film all the Planet Earth stuff and Frozen Planet down there.
Wow.
And then I became an instructor, teaching people how to land on the back of ships and things. And then after that, I got to become a test pilot Year-long course as test pilot school in 2009.
And was that at Boscombe Down?
At Boscombe Down, yeah, as a student, which is a very, you know, academic and academically challenging and flying and, yeah, hard work course.
Yeah.
Very rewarding. Then did 4 years testing, last 4 years. Did all the Wildcat testing at sea, Merlin Mark II, Lynx Mark 9 Alpha.
Wow.
For the last 4 years. And then 6 months ago, I got to become an instructor on the test pilot school. And now I teach on the Augusta 109, which is this aircraft behind me, the Lynx and the Gazelle aircraft.
Right. I'm glad I asked that question now. Thanks very much for telling us that, Lee. Also, it also tells a story that, you know, you can make that change in your career as well. You made quite a significant change, and you're now in a very exciting role.
Navy's great, I think, for being able to come up from the ranks. If you work hard, you've got a little bit of ambition, there's a little bit of luck, you know, being in the right place at the right time. But the Navy can take people with a little bit of, you know, potential and then turn them into something they want to be, and you know, it's great. And I've got, you know, real respect for how the Navy sort of turned me you know, into from a stoker to a test pilot, which is great.
Okay, tell us a little bit about the aircraft then that you're flying and teaching in. What's the purpose of having that aircraft at Boscombe Down?
Well, this is a 109, so a relatively modern civilian twin aircraft, twin-engined aircraft. We've got two of them at the school. They're fully instrumented, so all the pitot-statics, we've got a special boom on so we can see different airspeeds at different angles of attack and different side-slip angles. Every single movement the pilot does is all recorded, what the engine's doing and what the rotor disc is doing is all fully recorded. So we can go up and we can do stability and control tests, engine and rotor governing tests, lateral directional stability tests. And they basically, we can fly the tests, get the data from the aircraft, download it onto a dongle, and then we can put that into a graphical analysis tool, and then we can analyse exactly what we're doing, what the aircraft is doing when we put our inputs in. And this aircraft, it's got its foibles. We don't necessarily want the best aircraft on the test pilot school because we want to find problems. So, you know, with this aircraft, with regard to you know, how the automatic flying control system works, and how it handles in the low level environment, and is all tested by the test pilots.
Wow, okay. And what do you do after this? I mean, that's quite an interesting career. Where are you now?
I've got another couple of years of doing this. After that, you know, you can stay within the test pilot world. You can try and broaden and become a commander and work your way up within the Navy command structure. You can come back to the Navy as an instructor and go back to sea as a flight commander. Or, you know, maybe use your skill set and go outside and work as a test pilot in the civilian world, which... a lot, you know, a reasonable amount of people do sort of make this transition. I've been in 24 years now, so it might be time, you know, the next few years to move on.
Okay. Well, Lieutenant Commander Evans, thank you very much for joining us today on Extended. Just before we go, is there anything you'd like to say for anyone thinking about coming into a career in the forces?
I think they should look at all three forces, you know, and definitely, you know, if they haven't got the perfect qualifications to go to university and stuff, it's a great way of getting in, getting some really good education for free, getting some really good life skills, and then possibly working way up and doing things like, you know, I've done diving, military diving, and flying helicopters, and
very diverse
all over the world.
So
I've been very lucky, but them opportunities are there for anyone.
Right, thank you very much for joining us.
No problem at all.
Hi, I'm back on the flight line and I've come up to a wonderful little aircraft. I'm looking at a Falcon 10 from the French Navy, and I'm joined by...
Michael.
Yeah. And Michael, what's your role with the aircraft?
I'm a flight engineer.
Right, okay. Can you tell us a little bit about the role of this aircraft?
There are too many roles for this aircraft. First one is a transport mission from the French Navy. And the second one is IFR training for fighter pilots.
Right, okay. And in terms of your role on the aircraft, what's your role on the aircraft?
My role is to check engines, electrical circuit, hydraulic circuit. Check that everyone, everything goes right during the flight. To calculate fuel consumption.
Yeah.
And to assist the pilot in case of emergency or or breakdown.
And is it a single pilot or is it a two-pilot
two
aircraft?
Pilot.
It's a two-pilot aircraft. And what's its performance and range like? But how long will you be up in the air for on a normal mission?
Normal mission, the maximum range is 1,000 nautical miles.
Yeah.
And we fly at Mach 0.776.
Yeah. Okay.
And maximum is Mach 0.87.
Right, okay. And she's a lovely little aircraft. She's in lovely condition. Very, very pleased to have her here. Mm. Where is she normally based?
Yeah, it's based in Landivisiau, in Brittany, west of France.
Right, okay. Mm. And was that a one-stop flight out to here, or...?
Yes.
Yeah, straight out. Straight out.
Just straight here this morning and straight back this evening.
Oh, okay. So it's just one day.
Yes.
Well, have a wonderful show. Thank you very
much
for talking to us.
You're welcome.
Okay, I'm with Lieutenant Alex Lovell Smith from the Royal Navy, and we're in front of a Wildcat. But this isn't a Navy Wildcat, is it? It's an Army Wildcat.
Yes, that's right. I'm part of CHF, who are in conjunction with the Army Air Corps. Working towards fielding and then training personnel on the Wildcat, and I'm in fact one of the trainee pilots being trained by the Army Air Corps to fly alongside them in the future.
Okay, what are the differences between the Army version and the Navy version?
The Army version is optimised for the sensor rather than radar, so for the recce role and sort of the ISTAR role, if you like, whereas the Navy version, because of its role at sea, has radar for sort of anti-shipping and wide area surveillance of sea lanes, which obviously this aircraft won't be used for. Obviously the crews in this aircraft as well are all experienced land operators, although most of us have flown at sea at some point, and we're more familiar to flying in the land environment, whether we're Army or Navy.
And in terms of the transition, what are you transitioning from?
The Army Air Corps and CHF are transitioning from previous Lynx variants onto Wildcat H Mark 1. Personally, I've flown Lynx Mark 7 and Lynx Mark 9 Alpha in Afghanistan. And most of the crews coming to fly this aircraft are former Lynx Mark 9 Alpha crews. But there's a bit of a mixture of people. So.
And how long does it take to transist?
In terms of major milestones, it's just under a year to learn the aircraft. And that's split into two roles, obviously learning to fly the aircraft in a basic peacetime role and then becoming a sort of limited combat ready capability. Once we've moved from that, we'll then look to field it at sea and you know, and develop literal manoeuvre tactics and qualifications for ourselves once we've got to grips with it in the land environment.
And how different is it to fly? Obviously there's an awful lot more glass than
I'm on the training course, but it's pretty spectacular. It's compared to having, you know, pressure instruments everywhere and lots of small dials that are a bit dark and in weird places, you know, this has been optimised for the operator, so everything's integrated. It doesn't vibrate anywhere near as much as previous times I've flown. It feels very stable, and the seats are very comfortable, which is, compared to the Mark 7, particularly important. It's a very intuitive aircraft. So.
And talking about comfort, what sort of duration would this aircraft expect to take?
In terms of fuel endurance, we can take up to 2 hours-ish, depending on the role. I mean, if you're low-level operating and flying dynamically, obviously that'll reduce slightly. If you're medium-level flying sort of ISTAR orbits, that'll increase slightly. But, we look at 2 hours and plan from there, really.
Right. And are you enjoying flying the aircraft?
Oh, yeah, it's fantastic. Wouldn't change it for the world.
So what bit of advice would you give to somebody maybe coming into the Navy or thinking about joining the Navy?
The main thing with the Navy and the Army as well, and you could probably say the same for the Air Force, there's a lot of good jobs, and I certainly found you might go in wanting one job, but at the end of the day you'll suddenly discover there are loads you might want to do, and so you might go in with a one truck, I'm going to fly X, or I'm going to do this, or be an engineer, a doctor or whatever, but when you get in there and you meet people and make friends, you tend to follow your friends. The main thing is working with good people, and they're all good jobs.
Well, thanks very much for joining us.
No worries, thank you very much, have a good day.
You are listening to Extended, brought to you with the support of Nylon Films, producers of The Aviatrix.
Okay, we're back live at Yeovilton, and we have a competition for you to win a copy of Tracy's film, The Aviatrix. This, of course, is a record of Tracy Curtis Taylor's epic journey in a Boeing Stearman, recreating the 1928 flight by Lady Heath, who became the first person to fly solo from Cape Town to London. Tracy's lifelong dream was to recreate this flight, and I have to say, the film is absolutely stunning. You can buy a copy of the film, or you can rent it. But before the competition, let's hear some audio from the film.
I love the old world. I love the old colonial world. Lost worlds. And the courage. I think it's the courage that's so impressive.
Wing 630, continue the approach. The wind is still 18015.
She was a superb pilot, a gifted pilot, which is, you know, it's exactly what I aspire to. Which is why I then just get into my old aeroplane, strap myself in and take off. It's as if somebody has put a pearl in your hand when you can fly. You know, this rare gift.
Oh my God, I've got whales below me!
Nothing can hide. You can see everything. It's the view of the gods, isn't it? It's this wonderful perspective. Flight has captured their imagination, and everybody wants to see the steerman, and everybody wants to come out and join us.
Can you hoot, madam? Can you hoot?
What's her name?
Tracy is my name. What's your name?
Mayanna.
And that's the thing about Africa. There's something so immediate and vivid about it.
Woman in Africa.
Woman in Africa.
Whoa, that's nice.
More women in
Africa. And once it's sort of in your blood, you can never really shake it.
What do you do for rains?
For
rain?
For rain, I get wet.
You get wet.
Heavy rain, potentially hail. It would just destroy this aeroplane.
It's completely wild. There's just so much sand and just firing missiles at me. Operating now in this heat reduces the engine performance. That just pisses me off, really.
This probably looks ridiculous. I folded a little rag over my nose just to save getting scorched again.
It's most unusual for an aeroplane as basic as mine to be flying up Africa. And God knows what we're in for, really. We're getting into that part of Africa which is, you know, deeply deprived, deeply troubled, politically unstable. You know, it's a war zone through here.
They take any aircraft down with anti-aircraft guns, the twin guns.
You know, just a sitting duck for somebody with an AK-47, just filling you with lead.
I'm literally flying along the whole wall of smoke here. It's like the whole plane is on fire.
We're not allowed to film, so this is all undercover. I just want to just be safe and be still.
So do you think we're in trouble, Sally?
But we've got to finish the job, you know. I have to get home.
It's romance, beauty, a dream. Beyond the ordinary. I think you're exactly like they were.
I do recognise that this is probably the finest thing I'll ever do.
I might have just found my soulmate.
I think so. And she's flying away. How apt. It was a meteoric career. And then she disappeared from history. But she's coming back.
I think she's crazy.
Now, this isn't any ordinary film. The Aviatrix is about living life on your own terms and having the courage and determination to realise your greatest dreams. See Tracy, realise her, and see if this makes you gain the courage to face some of yours. What a lady. It was great to meet her earlier. Really enjoyed catching up with her again and very excited about her plans for the future. But anyway, here's the competition. We're looking for the best photo of Tracy's steerman. Now, this could be here today at Yeovilton or at another one of the air shows she's visited. It can be at any venue. You may have seen her in the plane, or if you're very lucky enough, maybe even on the flight itself. post the picture onto our Twitter or our Facebook page, tagging Nylon Films and CT Goodwood, of course, the feed for the flight itself. So that's at Nylon Films and at CT Goodwood. The closing date is August the 23rd. Please, only original photographs taken by your good self. We're keen to capture the essence of the flight, so any people in the background or backgrounds that are interesting might just add to your chance of winning. Good luck to everyone, and thanks again to Helen Morell at Nylon Films, and of course Tracy Curtis Taylor for supporting Extended. We'll post all of the pictures on our Facebook page.
Email us now. Get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk. And remember, there's no E at the beginning of Extended. Aviation questions, suggested topics, or even good old feedback are all welcome.
Okay, I'm walking along the flight line and I've just bumped into somebody I recognise only from social media. It's Rod. Hi, how are you?
Hey, I'm very well, thanks, Peter. Yourself?
Yeah, not bad. Enjoying the show. What's been good for you so far?
Well, obviously, so far, the main reason why I'm here is to see Vulcan XH558.
Yep.
Superb display, may I say. Absolutely wonderful with Martin Withers in the cockpit today. Absolutely superb.
Yeah, I've got to say, it's probably one of the best Vulcan displays I've seen in a long time.
Oh, yeah, long shot by a long shot. And probably one of the best things after. As soon as he disembarked from the Vulcan today, he was handed a pint straight away by Dr. Robert Fleming, which I thought was quite good. Well deserved.
Brilliant. It's the only aircraft as well that's turned everybody's heads.
Everybody looked at that. Yeah. Everybody. Literally, you could look around behind you and everybody was looking airside only. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing.
No, really, really enjoyed that. And probably, for me, it's going to be the last time I see it.
Really?
Probably it's going to be the last time I see a fly. So it was great to be here today. What else have you found that's interested you on the show?
At the show this year, I actually adored the F-16. That's awesome. Unbelievable. Absolutely
unbelievable
awesome.
Display.
The noise. Shame we didn't see too much more of the Typhoon. It just went one quick raggle over, and then that was it.
I was quite surprised.
Like, you heard it, and before you could see where it was, it had gone off to pastures elsewhere. So, which is a shame. But the F-16 absolutely superb.
Yeah, and you, of course, are Rod, and V-Force is what we all recognise you from.
Yeah, indeed. Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it started about nearly 2 years ago now with a hashtag that I put out on the social media side of Twitter, and I was just picking up on the amount of V-Force activity was going on there.
Yeah.
So I just made up this hashtag of hashtag Twitter V-Force. And about 2 months later, I met up with a chap called Dave up at Wellesbourne, Mountford Airfield, where XM655 is.
Yeah.
And under the Delta wings of her came a website, and that website is twittervforce.com. We've got now Instagram sites, blogs, and there's a forum on there as well. We've just started our own Instagram account as well, where there's loads of pictures and videos. And obviously our main lead feed from there is at VForceHQ.
Right, okay, and you're on Twitter as well. I've seen you, you're very active on Twitter. What are the sort of things people can look out for on your website and on your feeds?
So on the feeds, we try and get as much out possible as we can, V-Force-wise. And it's not just a Vulcan, obviously that's our most popular information we get. But I'm a big fan of Valiance and the Victors, and also my main big attraction is the little Avro 707s, which was the little mini Delta ones that they put up there to try and see if it worked, really. Which are superb little bits of kit, and it's a shame at the moment there's none left on show in the world at the moment.
Is it just bombers that you're interested in, or
bombers predominantly? We do get the odd things on there now and again. We get people talking about other Cold War jets, the Lightnings via like things at Fast Museum as well, like Mitchell's Lightning there. Brilliant. Always goes down pretty well. So if people add our hashtag on, they can, 99% time guaranteed, they're going to get a retweet, and that just goes out to thousands of people now.
Brilliant.
Which is excellent.
Brilliant. Okay, and where can we find those online, Ron?
Online, if you just look for www.twittervforce.com, that take you straight into the site, and then from there just follow the links, and they link you to every part of our website, and it links out to other Cold War related websites as well.
Excellent. Enjoy the rest of the show.
Fantastic, Bob. Will do. Good to see you.
And so to the get involved and feedback section of the show, and it's right back to episode 27, which of course was our space focused episode. We'd like to thank everyone for their positive messages on this episode, including our very good friend Isaac Alexander. Charlotte Dadswell said, another great episode, guys. Keep it up. I'm now working my way through Space Rocket History podcast right from the beginning. We also had messages from Grant McCarran and Ben Jones about the addictive listening to Mike Annis and, of course, the Space Rocket History podcast. Mike has been very heavily promoting Extended on his program, so we're very grateful for that, as well as really enjoying this program. As a side to that, Steve Vischer sent us a little link to a program on Australia's Only Astronaut. So thanks very much, Steve, for sending that. G. Ross Sharp swapped messages with Gareth about the Hunter flight that they both had taken, and there was a bit of one-upmanship there. So thank you, G. Ross Sharp, on Twitter. Tim's X10 was airline call signs. ATC Ben came in with one. He said Sky Raiders that operate the Airbus A313CJ to Antarctica use the call sign Snowbird. That's a pretty good one. And the RAAF training schools use Beaufort and Hudson. He also then goes on to say, in tribute to the World War II aircraft, the RAAF Caribous use Wallaby and Wombat, and he thinks they're coming back for the C-27Js as well. So thanks very much for that, Ben. Grant McCarran chipped in with, how about Tiger Airways, Australia's call sign? Whoops, sorry about that. He said, how about Tiger Airways, Australia's call sign, which is GoCat, and that's a brand of cat food down in Australia. I think it is here as well. Don't have a cat, have dogs, they'd eat them. So I think I only know that from the advertising. Anyway, moving on, Pod's challenge in the space episode was all about travelling to Mars. Chris Davis said, so long as he could be mission commander, he'd be totally up for it. Now our friends at Frombier said they should make Mars a penal colony. It worked for Australia. Now, before we get any complaints and email messages, look up Frombier. They're an amusingly uncouth internet airline, and we don't represent nor agree with their views and contributions, although they can be quite amusing. Over to our React episode, Air Smolik said they really, really enjoyed the podcast. Neil Braden really enjoyed the photographs on the Global Aviation Resource Review. And then on to Last Week in Farnborough. That proved to be a very popular episode, so thanks very much to everyone for sending in the messages. We'd really like to thank JV at Airbus again for his hospitality and all of their support. And we're going to try and get Neil Braden there in 2016. He says he was just thinking that when he favorited my tweet. 2016 it will be. He's going to book his flights. He would do now if they were open online. Mark Maiden said on Twitter, great Farnborough reporting from the Aviation Extended team. Well worth the listen. Thank you very much, Mark. Neil Holden said he especially enjoyed the A350 segment. The whole interview was excellent and very insightful. Of course, I met Joe Chung and Paul Varco at Farnborough, and Joe has reported, put his own report on the show with a very flattering report and Extended. So many thanks for that, Joe. And do check out his blog and report. There's some great photography on there and some pretty insightful dialogue. So go over to josephchung.co.uk. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. Over on Facebook, Amy Parkin posted us a lovely photo. Thank you. A shot at Waddington, Draken, I think. And Neil McCarthy posted some pictures of the Red Arrows. I think it was a presentation they were having. So thank you very much, Neil. Dave Homewood, of course, from the Wings Over New Zealand show, also posted a link about Les Monroe. Now, for those of you who don't know, he was one of the original members of 617 Squadron, of course, the Dambusters, DSO, DFC, and, of course, the Royal New Zealand Air Force. So links in that on our Facebook page to that show. Again, if you're into warbirds, I've said it before, Dave is well worth a listen. Then finally, before we go, a few shout outs. I'd like to thank Airbus again for supporting our show and providing the goodies, the polo shirts we're giving away today as we walk around. So if you've missed out on that one, sorry, we might have some more soon. As we're at Yeovilton, which of course is the home to the Royal Navy Fleet Air Arm, I want to give a massive shout out to Katie and the Royal Naval Historic Flight. They've had some big challenges. We're not seeing the swordfish fly today, which is heartbreaking, particularly for me. I have seen it a lot of times, but they're really having some challenges there. So we want to send them all the support we can to keep those very important aircraft in their possession and in tip-top condition. And of course, we want to see them flying for future generations. You can find them at royalnavyhistoricflight.org.uk, and I'll put that link in the show notes. Don't forget to use our Amazon link for any of those summer purchases. And of course, if you're buying t-shirts, our show supporters Basic Six will give you a 10% discount if you use the promo code EXTENDED. And it's really hot and sticky here, so if you're wearing an organic cotton t-shirt, which is what the Basic Six t-shirts are, with great aviation designs on them, you will be okay. Okay, it's time to wrap up for this episode. We'd again like to thank Helen Morrell at Nylon Films, but especially to Tracy Curtis Taylor. I'm going to put some links to Tracy's new site and new project on the show notes. Do look out for them. But thank you very much, Tracy and Helen, for supporting this episode. And of course, to our fabulous hosts today, the Royal Navy. You can find the Royal Navy hashtag YeoviltonAD. You can find them on Facebook at Yeovilton Air Day, on Twitter, and on YouTube with that same address, Yeovilton Air Day. We'd like to thank White Hearts, of course, and Peter Dixon, and to Doug Worrell and Basic Six for supporting Extended. You can find me at Nascot Hornet on Twitter and at xtpmedia.co.uk, as well as Facebook at xtpmedia. And there comes the music. It's time for me to say goodbye from Yeovilton. And remember to stay tuned into this frequency, Extended, Europe's premier aerospace radio station.
Extended would like to thank its partners, Global Aviation Resource, the Royal Aeronautical Society, and XTP Media, for their support in helping to present and produce the programme. Thanks for listening to Extended. We'll see you next time. And don't forget, we want you to contact us. So get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk is the email address you need. Extended.
This is XTP Media.